Thank you so much, President Riccobono, for the introduction. We are family indeed. In 1963, Dr. Kenneth Jernigan asked a pivotal question: is blindness a handicap or a characteristic? He went on to answer this by saying, "No one is likely to disagree if I say that blindness is a characteristic. Many more will disagree if I say that blindness is only a characteristic. It is nothing more or less than that." Now we gotta ask the question, why is diversity important within our membership? We've already answered that question nearly 60 years ago, because blindness is just a characteristic. As people, we are so much more than just one characteristic. Society often fails to recognize blind people for more than the blindness that they have. As members of the National Federation of the Blind, we need to start the journey. The National Federation of the Blind needs to set the example to identify blind individuals with their full identities. It is important to recognize and celebrate the diversity that is within our organization and recognize the impact that diversity has to contribute to our membership. We have a lot of diverse leaders, and we need to give them the opportunity to contribute to the impactful movement that the Federation has. It is with my honor and privilege to introduce a panel of diverse leaders who are here to share their stories about why diversity and their identities are important, especially in terms of how it contributes to their blindness journey. Our first panelist today is Tasneem Ashouli. Tasneem is the current chair of the Blind Muslims group within the National Federation of the Blind. She is a past national and state scholarship federation scholarship winner. And at this time, she is a PhD student at the University of Arizona studying math education. Tasneem, the floor is yours.
Hello, everyone. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, I will begin. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. God's peace, mercy, and blessings be upon you all. Thank you for the invitation to speak on the diversity and inclusion panel this year. I'm very honored to be given this wonderful opportunity. My name is Tasneem Ashouli. I am a blind Arab American Muslim woman, along with the previously mentioned involvement at the international level. I'm also the state treasurer of the NFB of Arizona Student Division, an active member of the Tucson chapter. Ever since I joined the NFB back in 2016, I always had the feeling of something is missing. Although the people I've met throughout the years have welcomed me with open arms and hearts, whether I was part of the NFB of North Carolina Charlotte chapter or NFB of Arizona, I always felt I was surrounded with family, but there was always the feeling of something missing. And this piece that is missing is now being brought to attention and being addressed. My and along with others' identity, beliefs, and practices are starting to be recognized and included in spaces within the Federation. As a blind Muslim, along with other blind Muslims in the Federation, we frequently had to juggle between our religious Islamic practices and involvement in the Federation. For example, lack of food accommodations and another segregation factor is what we faced is the invocations or prayers that are usually offered, except for the first time during this convention where we as Muslims were asked to open Thursday's general session with an Islamic prayer, which was a big step towards inclusion, and we appreciate that. Another challenging struggle is to have to choose between NFB-related commitments over observances of major holidays. This was the case when I was a state scholarship recipient in the state convention that year fell on Eid al-Adha, or the Day of Sacrifice. This is when Muslims commemorate the story of Prophet Ibrahim, peace be upon him, test of faith. This holy day concludes a series of holy days observed by Muslims, it concludes the period of Hajj, which is the pilgrimage to holy city of Mecca, and it is right after the day of Arafah, or the day of standing. Muslims around the world observe these holy days by praying and asking for God's forgiveness, and skipping these significant holy days was necessary at that time, as it is mandatory that a finalist cannot be excused from his or her responsibilities, even for religious observances.
All right, we will. Oh,
she got booted apparently. Hopefully we'll get her back.
All right, what we're gonna do is move on to our next panelist and see if after our next panelist, if Tasneem will be able to rejoin us and share the rest of her story afterwards. Our next panelist that we have is Dula Jarbo. Dula is the president of the Deaf Blind Division within our Colorado affiliate. She also participates much in the Deaf Blind community involvement within the state of Colorado. And she also represents those who have intersecting disabilities within our federation. Dula, the floor is yours.
Can you see and hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you so much, President Riccobono, my Federation family, for spending the time with me and listen to some of my story and how I live with multiple disabilities. For those of you who do not recognize my name as Dula Jarbo, I've been in the Federation for most of my life. My legal name is Lauren Hunter. Live the life you want, nobody can stop you. Reach for the stars. Oh, wait, that's not how it goes. So, as a deafblind person, you don't always hear things properly. And I love to sing, as you can see. I love music. But I don't always get the lyrics right because I don't hear them properly. Most popular songs you can find the lyrics for thanks to something like Google. But for those like you want song, I have yet to find a copy of the lyrics because I'm guessing since it's a Federation song, it's not popular enough to have lyrics listed somewhere. And when I pulled the song up on YouTube and tried to use the closed caption feature, apparently it doesn't work with JAWS because I didn't have anything to read. So I'm still trying to figure out just from listening. I've got the first verse and I think I have the full chorus. I'm still trying to figure out the second verse. And one of the challenging things for me as a deafblind person is getting people to understand that, yes, I might need you to repeat something, but most likely I don't need it louder. I don't need it slower. I just need to hear it again because I didn't process it correctly the first time. I have a rare genetic syndrome. It is called Alström syndrome. It causes organ deterioration and failure. It's not something where you get told you have just blindness or blindness and hearing loss. You continually have organs trying to deteriorate and fail. And that is very challenging to live with. My parents were not aware that they were going to have a blind child, let alone a child with multiple disabilities. And we did not figure out my diagnosis of Alström syndrome until I was almost an adult. So we didn't know what to expect. And one of the most challenging things for us to deal with was something that's called hyperphagia. And hyperphagia causes different types of eating disorders. For me, it caused the issue of when I had a meal, I would get full, but I wouldn't stay full. And as a child, you don't have that lived experience and you don't understand what other people are experiencing. You just pay attention to what your body wants. I ended up getting into trouble a lot because I get into food. And we didn't know that this was a biological issue, not a behavioral issue, until I was an adult. as an adult, I've continued to have organ deterioration. My most two recent organ deteriorations that have been really challenging are kidney disease. When your kidneys wear down, they don't filter out things properly. So you have to be a lot more careful about what you put into your body. You have to be careful about how you eat, how you drink. And so for those of you who have been drinking copious amounts of coffee this week, not an option for me, because coffee has a lot of potassium, and potassium is hard on the kidneys. Lots of things are hard on the kidneys when they don't work properly. The other one that's been very challenging, and they don't have an explanation, is that my lungs are not properly using oxygen. So I have to be on supplemental oxygen all the time. It's harder to walk quickly. It's harder to exercise and try to stay in shape. And I'm so happy that we're working on medical devices, because my oxygen concentrators are not accessible. I have a stationary oxygen concentrator that plugs into the wall. You have a dial to adjust the setting, and you can just spin it and spin it and spin it. And the piece that shows what level is at is behind inside the machine. So as a blind person, there's no way for me to know where the setting is. And with the portable oxygen concentrators I have, I can set the level of oxygen that I have, but I cannot read the LCD screen. So for instance, yesterday it overheated and all I got was it beeping at me. So I knew something was wrong, but then I had to get a sighted person to look at the screen and tell me what the issue was. I'm a service dog user. I have a guide dog. She's great. She's getting old, so I'm getting to the process of paying attention to when she needs to retire, which is one of the hard parts of having a service dog. I also have a PTSD dog. He's self-trained, and I have PTSD, one from, I have experienced emotional abuse from prior relationships, trying to find somebody who would help me with managing my medical issues and be a caregiver. And also, when you continually hear that your body is breaking down and not working properly mentally, that is difficult to continue to take in and still keep a positive attitude.
Doula?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Beth. I just wanted to let Colin know that Tasnim is back in. Sorry to interrupt.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that?
I wanted to let Colin know that Tasnim is back in the Zoom.
Okay, great. Where was I? So yes, I have a PTSD dog. He's a terrier mix, and he's been trained to detect and know when I'm triggering by how I'm emotionally reacting, and he'll jump up in my lap and lick my face and help me to calm down so that I can logically work through things instead of being stuck emotionally. One of the things that's different about me, I guess unique to me and possibly other people with multiple disabilities, is that I'm not employed. And I choose not to be employed because of the fact that I'm dealing so much with managing medical issues, going to see doctors, dealing with medical tests. And I feel like I would not be reliable. My training is in mediation. That was the career I wanted to have. And I felt it would be unfair to clients for them to say, okay, we are ready to go through this process and have me come back and say, I'm sorry, but I can't do this today because I'm too sick. I'm in too much pain, I don't have enough energy. It wouldn't be fair. So I manage my medical conditions, and that's my job. And it's a little different because most people, it's common in conversation to say, oh, what do you do? And I have a hard time coming back with something of an answer just because of my own particular conditions. It's not a possibility. I'm sure there's a lot more that I could share, but I'd like to end there and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Dula. Thank you so much for sharing with us your personal stories and all the things that you experience. And it's an honor to have you as a leader within our organization. Since we do have Tasneem who was able to connect back on, I want to reintroduce Tasneem Mashuli. Again, she is the Blind Muslims group chair, and she is a past scholarship winner of the National and State National Federation of the Blind winner. Tasneem, the floor is yours.
It looks like Tasneem is still locked up, so Colin, back to you.
Thank you so much, Beth. All right, the next panelist that we do have is Sanho Steele-Lashark. Sanho is a strong leader within our federation. He is currently the chair of the LGBTQIA+ group within the National Federation of the Blind. He also is a board member of the Oklahoma State Affiliate. Sanho, the floor is yours.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Colin. Hello, everyone, and happy convention as always. I am so grateful to have the opportunity to address more than 1,000 people today who are people that understand blindness and understand my blindness, or at least the way that it manifests in my life. That is a gift that, of course, we don't get every day in our lives. One of my identities, though, that often goes unaddressed in the Federation and elsewhere is the identity of, in my case, being gay, but more broadly, people who are LGBT. And when I had the opportunity to speak on today's panel, I thought, well, I could tell my story, sure. I could also begin to chip away and tell the stories of people who are like me, stories that aren't often told. I realized that I was gay when I was 12 years old and went blind about 3 weeks later. There was no notice that I would go blind. We didn't know that that was a possibility. It was a thing that suddenly happened. And then I had two identities to grapple with. And all of that privilege, or much of that privilege that I'd been kind of raised with, went away. It disappeared and dissolved. And I suddenly had to learn how to exist in the world as a blind, gay 12-year-old. And it was interesting for me that as a blind person, people automatically assumed I became unaware. We all know that struggle. That's the struggle of people assume what you can and cannot do, mostly what you cannot do. But then there was this new bridge to cross of, I was also gay, right? So my male friends no longer particularly wanted to be around me. They had lots of questions and they didn't have the language to voice those questions and have satisfying answers. So my social circle changed drastically for multiple reasons. And meanwhile, I'm learning blindness skills and learning who I am. And it was an interesting time. Anyway, now here I am at 28, some 16 years later, nearly. And I've learned quite a bit about myself, but it's also now time and opportunity for me to share that knowledge with other people. So when I was first orbiting the NFB, I held it at arm's length. I had heard, among other things, that it was not a place where people like me were particularly welcome. And I did not know if that was true, to be clear. I'd never faced adversity from within the NFB, but I also wasn't out. So of course I wasn't facing adversity from within the NFB. And then I heard of the NFB LGBT group, and I thought, oh, that is something I want to see get off the ground. Went to a few meetings, It was a place where there were people who understood my blindness, as all of you do, and people who understood that I was part of the LGBT community. And then it became more of a characteristic, not something that particularly needed to be talked about. And in that group, what I found were people who were multiply disabled, people who were of different religions, different backgrounds, different everything. And they had blindness in common. They also had LGBT-ness in common, or they were allies. And either way, they were people who brought their diversity to the table and they celebrated their differences. And I thought, wow, what a robust situation to find oneself in, not just celebrating blindness, but celebrating all of who we are on a holistic level. It was incredible. And to say that even within the LGBT group here in the NFB, we have such incredible diversity and shifting perspectives, there's no way to put it into words. Really, it is just a whole lot of different people coming together to celebrate one another. And then I began thinking, well, why might the NFB at large not have really been having this conversation for decades preceding? And the nearest I could figure is that we were so focused on blindness and celebrating our blindness that we weren't having those conversations about these other identities. And I became curious, what's the real world impact of that? There were people like me who didn't join the NFB because I didn't know if I was welcome. But what about the people who were here? And I started asking around. And what I learned is many people felt like they were in the shadows in this organization that loved a huge part of who they are. They felt like they weren't welcome to have those conversations, to bring that identity to the forefront. They thought that maybe, as I experienced when I was 12 years old, what would be a bridge too far? Sure, these people might accept me for being blind, but do they accept these other things about me? I don't know. And if it's not, I don't want to find out. Well, the NFB group, the NFB LGBT group here has really been stripping away those fears, because now we have the opportunity to have both camaraderie, where we're shoulder to shoulder with one another, and openness and transparency, where we say to non-NFB LGBT members, we can say, we're here, we exist, we are proud of ourselves, and we're so proud that you're proud of us too. Sometimes difficult questions do come up, certainly. Sometimes we face adversity even from within the Federation, but we're working on it. We're having those courageous conversations and we're doing our best to kind of educate and spread awareness. Many non-LGBT members might look at us and say, why do you need a group? Why do you need a month for Pride? I mean, straight cis people aren't getting a Pride month. And we say, right, because every day of the calendar is straight cis Pride because it's become normalized. It's just a part of your experience. Whereas we need these groups and we need a little bit of recognition of our existence, just so that way everyone knows who we are and that we're there. I do like to tell people, if you think that you don't know an LGBT person, I assure you, you very much do. It's estimated that 10 to 15% of the American population is LGBT of some flavor. You might not know it, but definitely we're out there and we're leading happy, successful, productive lives right around you. And that's a fine thing. Not everything has to be about that one identity that we have, but a bunch of our lives are about that identity, a little bit anyway. I wanted to let everyone know when we meet. The NFB LGBT group has an email list that you can find. You could email nfb-lgbt-subscribe@nfbnet.org. That will auto-generate a subscription email for you. You can respond or you can click the link and be added to our list to get our updates. Alternatively, we do also have a Facebook page that you can find at National Federation of the Blind LGBT Group. You request admission and then we go ahead and admit you. And then through both the NFB LGBT Facebook page and the email list, we have weekly meetings on Zoom, though you're also welcome to call in. There's always a number included in the information. And whether you're using the Zoom app or a telephone line, you can just go ahead and meet with us every Thursday night at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, 6 Pacific. And the meeting goes on for several hours. It's very social and informal. It's just a way for us to all stay connected and do good work. All right. Thank you so much, everyone. Again, my name is Sanho, pronouns he, him, his, and thank you so much for being here and for being open.
Thank you so much, Sanho. I appreciate the guidance and the leadership and for sharing with the Federation on what we can do to make sure to take the LGBTQIA plus community into consideration and what all you guys are doing. I do want to provide one last opportunity for Tasneem. Beth, I'm not sure if she made it back on. The Federation does respect the voices of those who have various religions, including our blind Muslims. So Tasneem, were you able to get reconnected?
Yes, I am.
All right, the floor is yours, Tasneem.
Okay, I apologize, everyone. This is the first time this has happened. So I turned off my camera and I'm using it on my phone. So thanks for your patience. I'll start from the part that I left off, which is I'm not only, you know, a blind Muslim, I'm also an Arab American. Ever since I joined the NFB in 2016, I had the feeling of something is missing. Although the people I've met throughout the years have welcomed me with open arms and hearts, whether I was part of the NFB of North Carolina, Charlotte chapter, or NFB of Arizona, I always felt that I'm surrounded with family. But there's always the feeling of something is missing. And this piece that's missing is now being brought to attention and being addressed. Along with other identities and beliefs and practices are starting to be recognized and included in spaces within the Federation. As a blind Muslim, along with other blind Muslims in the Federation, we frequently had to juggle between our religious Islamic practices and our involvement in the Federation. For example, lack of food accommodations and another segregation factor that we face is the invocations or prayers that are usually offered. Except for the very first time during this convention where we as Muslims were asked to open Thursday's general session within Islamic prayer, which was a big step towards inclusion, and we appreciate that. And another challenging struggle is to have to choose between NFB-related commitments over observances of major holidays. This was the case when I was the state scholarship recipient. The convention that year fell on Eid al-Adha, or the Day of Sacrifice. So this is when Muslims commemorate the story of Prophet Ibrahim, peace and blessings be upon him, test of faith. This holy day concludes a series of holy days, especially the period of Hajj or pilgrimage. Muslims around the world observe these holy days by praying and asking God's forgiveness, and skipping these significant holy days was necessary at that time, as it is mandatory that the finalist cannot be excused from his or her responsibilities, even for religious observances, which will lead to disqualification. And as everyone knows, it is a great honor to receive such recognition. It was also a means for me to connect with my new community due to my educational plan and having to move from one state to another. And the pressing need to reestablish myself within this lovely community. Missing holiday observances is a time of struggle and solitude for the people of faith. Islamic holidays and practices are usually very social and collaborative. You are usually at the mosque and with your family and loved ones, praying, exalting, and remembering God, sharing love and joy. In most cases, Islamic religious observances are hardly recognized or even taken into consideration in the Federation and generally in the United States. However, currently the Federation is changing that. The Federation is directly working with the NFB Muslims group to do what needs to be done to have Islamic practices be recognized and Muslims equitably included within the Federation. The Federation is head-starting this initiative, but have further to go. But hopefully the Federation would serve as a model to the United States when it comes to access, inclusion, and equity for practicing Muslims and other underrepresented groups. I want to be one of the voices here that encourages my beloved NFB and other communities in America and beyond to become familiar with the true Islam as a faith and its beautiful message, practices, observances, and holidays, and certainly not to fall for the negative notions spreading in the media. I want us all to recognize and keep in mind the Islamic practices, observances when planning for events and activities, such as in state and national conventions, as we do with observances from other faiths. Most NFB affiliates and chapters and divisions and groups would not even consider scheduling a convention over Christmas, Easter, Thanksgiving, and other major holidays. Therefore, we should also not do the same for Eid al-Adha, Eid Day of Arafah, Ramadan, and Eid al-Fitr, and other Islamic major Islamic holidays or days. This struggle between faith and commitments, as well as belonging, still continues to appear. I hope we do continue to provide these types of spaces where voices are heard and identities are included. And only then this piece that is missing could be found and we become whole, healthy, one and united. Without the support of one another, we cannot continue to build the federation. We are stronger when we are diverse. We grow when our hands are tightly grasped with one another, and we are stronger and better together. If you would like to connect with the NFB Muslims group, you may do so after subscribing to our email listserv at nfb-muslims@nfbnet.org, and it's listed on the main listservs. Again, it's nfb-muslims@nfbnet.org. We welcome all. Thank you all, and I look forward to continue serving in my beloved federation. Peace be upon you all. Ma'asalam. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Tasneem. This is a momentous year for the federation. It is the founding year of the Blind Muslims group. So thank you, Tasneem, for your guidance and leading that group and teaching us to understand. Our last presenter for tonight's panel will be Priscilla Young. Priscilla is a member of the Asian American Pacific Islander, or AAPI, group of community. She is a member, a longtime member of the Federation, and she is a senior services manager for the Sacramento Society for the Blind. The floor is yours, Priscilla. Thank you.
Thank you, Colin, for this opportunity. Good evening, everyone. I'm so grateful to be here. My parents immigrated here from Hong Kong as young adults, and I was born in the US. I am Chinese American. Growing up with vision loss in my Asian culture, I felt isolated and different because of my blindness. When I think about the values that have been instilled in me from my Asian culture, I think about the values of working hard, surviving in the midst of challenges, and valuing the family unit beyond the individual. However, when it comes to disability, most Asian families see disability through the lens of shame, being a burden, and the cause of blindness perhaps being brought on by family sin. It has taken me many years to come to see that my personal journey of blindness within my Asian culture is a mixed set of experiences. I now recognize the good in my culture, as well as the negative aspects of my culture that have impacted me. Thinking back to my past as a child, these cultural truths were embedded into who I was, although I did not have the words to express them growing up. One of my earliest memories that stands out to me was my grandma in Hong Kong leaving me at home when all the other cousins were able to go out and have fun. She said that if I went out and my cane touched someone else, they would become blind just like me. I learned at a young age that being blind was shameful and embarrassing. My vision loss was a family secret to be hidden. I had to do everything I could to be normal. We never used the word blind in our family, nor knew any stories of successful blind people. My parents loved me, and they were well-intentioned and did everything they could to help me see again. Their attempts included numerous acupuncture appointments on my eyes and making me drink all that bitter medicinal soup that I too guzzled down, hoping it would bring a miracle. I learned through this that my parents would work hard and sacrifice their time and money to help me heal from this condition. If I did not heal from my vision loss, then the only other logical alternative for me was to find a husband who would take care of me. Looking back, they too were byproducts of their cultural beliefs. And therefore, so was I. I began to also believe that I was not capable of taking care of myself and that I would forever be a burden to my family for the rest of my life. Well, fast forward a couple of years after I received training and mentorship at the Louisiana Center for the Blind, I met my husband, who is also Chinese American, and we were married without the blessing of his family. His family had disowned him because they were against his choice of marrying me, a blind woman who they believed, without even meeting me, would become a burden to him. After all, they too were caught in the Asian cultural misconceptions of blindness. These years were trying times for my husband and me. I questioned all that I learned about independence from the NFB. I am grateful for my friends in the NFB who listened to my hurt. I was on the brink of being dragged back into my past cultural beliefs of shame and uselessness. I went to counseling so that I could do the internal work of acknowledging the cultural pain, to forgive and to let go in order to move forward so that I could be proud of all that made me who I am. Only then could I truly begin to approach my relationship with my husband's family with openness and understanding of their own cultural experiences that led to their misconceptions about blindness. Thankfully, as the years passed, my relationship with my mother-in-law mended, and we continued to move towards reconciliation. But this didn't happen in a Western way, like with an apology full of words, open conversation, and hugs, but more so with small gestures that show me that she, in her own way, accepts me. I realized that I needed to listen to her and to actively look for opportunities to make real connections in any way possible to take small steps forward. My husband and I wanted to show my mother-in-law that we valued family. In the early years, we would attend uncomfortable family dinners where nobody would speak to me, and I felt invisible. This was painful and took grace and humility. But I realized that there was value in just being there because it meant I was present. Finally, when I had my son, something slowly shifted, and my mother-in-law responded by caring for my son. We allowed her to give him his Chinese name as a gesture to further connection. Today, we do not talk about the painful start of our relationship, but she shows me that her heart is open by the special chicken soup she makes me, the lucky red envelope money she gives my children, and she always welcomes us into her home. Similarly, when we visit, I listen to her attentively as she shares about her life growing up as an immigrant and all the pain and hard work it took her to support her family. She, as a mother, was only motivated by wanting what was best in her own cultural view for her son. I understand now how the Asian culture has shaped her beliefs about disability. Just as I have had to overcome the negative stigmas personally, she also had to in her own life. I am grateful for her willingness to work through these negative cultural beliefs in her own way and in her own time. The journey to overcoming the stigmas of blindness is one that we as Asians will face because we live within our Asian culture and all its values have helped shape who we are. We who are here today and identify as blind AAPI members are fortunate because we have learned of another way to live our best life. The positive philosophy about blindness can transform our beliefs from that of shame to one of pride, from being a passive minority to now playing an active role in changing our own destiny, from feeling invisible to now having a voice. We each have a story to share about who we are and what makes our blindness journey unique. Together, in this pivotal moment of time, we now must find the courage to share honestly, openly, and to seek to bring about understanding for all. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Priscilla. Thank you so much for sharing with us your cultural background and how your blindness journey influenced it. Tonight, we've heard from someone who identifies as a Muslim. We've heard from somebody who has an intersecting disability who is deafblind. We've also heard from someone who identifies as gay, and we've heard somebody who identifies as Chinese. By no means is that the end of diversity within our organization. I have one last parting message for everybody. The leaders that we heard from today have shared so many amazing stories. Stories and vulnerability go hand in hand. The vulnerability of the storyteller needs to be open and share their stories out. But it's also vulnerable for the listener who hears these stories to let these stories sink in. The stories that change us as people are those that inspire us by teaching us strength and how to overcome adversity. The world treats the blind in a way where we have plenty of opportunity to face adversity on a daily basis. The National Federation of the Blind cannot be a place where our members face adversity of discrimination. It needs to be a place where members, regardless of what background that they come in, have a place of belonging. It's time that our diversity is celebrated, and it's time for diversity to be recognized for the importance that it has in our movement. It's time that diversity is interwoven into everything that we do. And it starts with us as members, as chapters, as affiliates, and as a national organization. All of our stories are beautiful. And it's time that we talk to each one, to each other, to say that I hear you, I believe you, and I want to understand you. It's time to build a more diverse, equitable and inclusive federation. Thank you, Mr. President.